Hi, I'm Louise Seller. I'm the director of the Thyroid Trust. You're joining us today on a Talk Thyroid special for UK Health Radio Charity Hour to raise awareness of the World Thyroid Day on the 25th of May and International Thyroid Awareness Week. I have the privilege to be joined today by Ricky Valletto. I hope I've said that right, Ricky, is the CBBC News Round reporter.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ricky, and this is Westminster Abbey, where the King will be crowned in just a few hours.
Hello, everyone. This is News Round. I'm Ricky. We're live on CBBC, coming up in the next few minutes.
Hi, how are you, Louise?
I'm very well, thank you very much. It's a beautiful day here. It's not often we get this much sunshine.
I know, I was going to say, if you can hear the birds tweeting away, I've got the sliding doors open, the sun is shining, the washing's on the line. What more could you ask for?
I think it is worth sharing before we begin that both Ricky and I have been diagnosed with autoimmune Graves' disease. And for those listeners who aren't aware, Graves' disease is an autoimmune condition that causes an overactive thyroid and is also known as hyperthyroidism or thyroid toxicosis. And that is where the thyroid gland produces too much of the thyroid hormones. It's also worth mentioning that all the content and information discussed between Ricky and I today is purely for information and enjoyment purposes only and does not constitute or substitute any kind of professional health or medical advice. So if you have any concerns or questions about your own health or symptoms, then please, please speak to a medical professional. So I know you haven't spoken much, I don't think, before about your journey with a thyroid disorder, have you?
No, I haven't. So I was diagnosed with an overactive thyroid, Graves' disease,
in 2015.
And initially it was something that kind of crept up on me quite slowly. I noticed I was a bit more agitated, more anxious. But in my job as a presenter and a reporter, I tend to get quite nervous before I go on air anyway. So I've always not been very good at dealing with my nerves, but it was getting to the point where they were almost crippling. So I found myself sitting outside the studios, you know, with my legs folded, trying to just breathe and calm myself down. And I couldn't understand what was going on. And I just put it down to the fact that life was really busy. Work was really busy at that moment. And I was flying to different countries, reporting on different stories. So I just thought maybe that could be what it was.
But it shows that you're very used to these sort of, high stressful situations with some of the things that I know you've reported on in your professional career. I mean, they're quite intense, aren't they? So it's not like you weren't used to being in those sorts of situations.
Whatever story I tackled, whether it was dealing with conflicts or children who needed help and support, going to countries where there were bushfires, it's kind of just what I did. And I just got on with it. But it got to a point where I was struggling on one particular assignment. I was in America and we were looking at how children over there are dealing with obesity. Obesity levels in the UK are kind of really creeping up. So we went to America to hear really in particular how they're coping, because children in America do face a lot of struggles when it comes to their weight and the high sugar foods, the diet. A lot of
lifestyle.
It isn't their fault. It's down to the fact that these foods are cheap, they're more prevalent. So we went over to America to speak to kids and to parents about what they're doing to try and help. And while I was out there, I just noticed, looking at myself in the mirror, I looked different. I looked skinnier and I didn't look myself, not in a good way.
And you hadn't been doing anything to actively try and,
nothing.
No.
I was a regular gym goer, maybe once a week on the treadmill for half an hour, a few other bits and bobs, but nothing major. So again, I started to think, well, now I'm losing weight. And then I started to get the tremors, and I started to get the shakes. I couldn't sleep, could not sleep. So I would be lying in bed thinking, I've never had problems with sleep before, so I can't sleep now. And I you know, eventually your body just is so shattered, it does eventually fall asleep. So I started to really worry. And I thought, you know, is this Parkinson's disease? Is this something else? I just, you know.
Yeah, see, it's ironic. So ironic you use that, because as a Graves patient myself, that is exactly how I, the sort of debilitating symptom that prompted me to think there's something really wrong was the uncontrollable shaking.
Yeah.
And that exact same thought of, oh, have I got Parkinson's disease? Who did you speak to? Where did you go if you were in America?
So I ate so much out there talking about a series on obesity, but I was so hungry all the time, but I was still not putting on any weight. So I came back and we ended up doing the UK part of the documentary in Manchester. And we had a brilliant doctor called Dr. Rada, who's fantastic. She was working with us on this series, looking at how the human body works, what happens when children develop diabetes.
Yeah.
And I started to talk to her, as you do with doctors, God bless them. So I just said, look, I've got the symptoms. I'm really interested to hear your thoughts. And straight away, she, you know, listed it all off and said, go and get your blood levels checked, because it sounds to me like you've got an overactive thyroid.
Recognized it from your symptoms straight away, which is
recognized it straight away, which is excellent, because I had been to the doctors a couple of times, and twice a doctor said, you know, it sounds like you're really stressed. And because of course you're giving doctors information, and so they make that assessment based on the information that you give them. And I was saying, I've got a stressful job, my life is very stressful at the moment. Perhaps wasn't giving all the other symptoms that, or I just wasn't aware of them as much.
Yeah.
So the doctor on two occasions just said to me, look, you're pretty stressed. Try and relax a bit more, get a bit more sleep, early nights and all of that. And at that time, I didn't have any kids. Those things you can do.
You can do, yeah, without
you can do. Oh, wow, I missed those days.
I was going to say how you probably missed those days, yeah.
I know. It wasn't until I met Dr. Rada filming this documentary. She then said to me, go back to your doctor and try and demand for a blood test. These things aren't that difficult to do. So I went back, had a blood test, and within 4 or 5 hours, which is miraculous, to say, your levels are ridiculously high. You are overactive. Your thyroid is really playing up, and your heart rate is you know, it's dangerously, yeah, it's dangerously high, and we need to get you in to start you some treatments. And originally they talked about having beta blockers and things like that, but I had asthma as a child and still a little bit asthmatic, wasn't able to take those. So I tell you what, it was the biggest. Having that call from the GP to say, you have this, now I was able to put a name to all these symptoms that I had. That I remember being in the office and almost breaking down in tears, because I was so relieved to know what it was, and thought, right, okay, we can try and sort this out now. So I went back to the GP. They put me on carbimazole, quite a high dosage, I think. And then I just started to have regular blood tests. And then figure out, what is a thyroid?
Yeah, well, that was going to be my first question. What did you know before you were diagnosed? I mean, I'm assuming subsequently they then tested your antibodies to discover that it was Graves that was the cause of your hypothyroidism.
Yes.
But what did you know prior to actually being diagnosed with a thyroid condition? Were you aware of where it was?
No, I'd never heard of it before. I mean, no,
that's really common.
Yeah, maybe a thyroid wasn't an alien word. I've heard it in conversations, perhaps, you know, watching the news, and maybe it was brought up or whatever, but I'd never, didn't know where it was, what it looked like, and the integral role it plays in your everyday life, from just living to even fertility. That became an issue as well, because there's some studies which suggest it can affect fertility in men. Certainly I know in women it can as well. So, you know, the effects that it can have on your sperm, all these kind of things that I wasn't aware of. So I did a lot of investigating, because that's my job, tried to read up as much as I could about it, spoke to Dr. Rada, who had given me this initial diagnosis, said, oh my gosh, you were right. She was fantastic, gave me a lot of support, explained to me how it works, the different levels. And
it was great you had access to. I was going to say, one of the things I was going to ask is, did you find it easy to get information and advice? And where did you go and look for that once you'd got that diagnosis?
I wouldn't say I found it easy. I was very lucky. I work with some brilliant doctors and health professionals and people you meet along the way. So I had that resource to tap into. And then I came across the Thyroid Trust, and I came across quite a few different thyroid charities. But initially, I was just trying to read up on it. I got a book. I can't remember the title of the book now, but it was a very old fashioned book written for someone in the 1970s, perhaps. There didn't seem to be a lot of literature around thyroid, and there was only maybe a paragraph or two on overactive. There seemed to be a lot of emphasis on some of the other areas.
That's right. And I mean, hypothyroidism is the most common of the thyroid disorders. So there is generally people talking about thyroid disease is one of the things that we want to try and do more of, because of exactly what you found, is that the information out there is limited, and what access people have to that information is getting better with social media and opening up those sorts of communication channels. But you know, I suppose going back 10 years ago, some of those things were still relatively in their, you know, weren't as wide used as they are now.
Yeah, you're right. They were kind of in their infancy, and even Twitter wasn't as prevalent as it is now. Sharing stories. I joined a Facebook group, and that was really handy, actually, listening to other people's issues. And most of it was predominantly female-based, a lot of women. And I'd always cling on to the one or two men that said that they had hypothyroidism, or, you know, how we could relate with our symptoms. But
that was going to be one of my other questions, is how have you found it? Because, you know, we know from our own community base that, you know, thyroid disease does disproportionately affect women, but that doesn't mean that it's exclusively affects women, as you know from your own experience. And we do have plenty of men in our community that are affected as well. So have you found that, you know, did you find the information was very geared up towards predominantly, you know, a female audience?
I wouldn't say it was geared towards them. I would just say that it was, the space was full of women in these social media sites, and not
we're very good at talking,
which is great. And I've never met another man who has an overactive thyroid. No one in my family seems to have an overactive thyroid. So I struggle to meet and talk to people who are in the same boat as me. But you know what, I'm not one of these. I can't speak to women. I enjoy speaking to everyone. When I grew up in the playground, I'd have friends that were boys, friends that were girls. It didn't make a massive difference. It's just, I suppose, when it comes to the biology of you going to a doctor and being told this predominantly impacts women more than it does men, and for men who do get it, it's more than likely, if your levels become normal again, you will relapse. For some reason, we are told that men who have hypothyroidism, it's hard to shift, or it's hard to get rid of. You know, a lot of men will just have this forever unless they have a treatment like having the thyroid removed or the radioactive iodine therapy.
When you were diagnosed, did anyone advise you in terms of the fact that Graves' disease, you know, is a chronic illness, and that there is there's no cure for Graves' disease? Yes, they can manage the condition, and yes, you can have what's classed as definitive treatment, where they either remove the thyroid or the thyroid is destroyed through radiotherapy. Anyone sort of talk that through with you, that this was something you were going to have to manage?
No, I'll be honest, my GP in Manchester at the time didn't really know an awful lot about thyroid disease, so that was tricky. It was only when I was referred to a specialist, obviously, that I had that initial consultation with a fantastic doctor in Manchester at the Royal Infirmary there, and he was brilliant, explained a lot to me. But then it's a busy man, never really got to see him again. All my other appointments were with a nurse who would just literally take my bloods, check my weight. If I had any questions, it was always just kind of what I'd read about on the internet, and wasn't that depth of knowledge that I was really wanting to hear. So that was a little bit tricky. And even now, I know about it, but I probably don't know enough about it. So I'm always wanting to learn more.
And so you've been on carbimazole now for nearly a decade, is that right?
Yeah, so on and off. So I came off it once when my levels were back to normal again. Then, within about 8 months, I think I relapsed.
Relapsed, yeah.
Second time, came off of it. And then I think it was even quicker that time. It was like 4 months later, I was all over the place again. So I'm at a point now where, because I have young children, I work with children an awful lot in my job. The radioactive iodine treatment isn't perfect. You know, I'd have to have it in the summer holidays or something. So, because you're not.
Yeah, it's a period of isolation afterwards. Yeah.
You're not really meant to be around kids or pregnant women or that kind of thing. So, And because of my job, being a broadcaster, I use my voice. I'm a little bit worried and concerned about having the thyroid removed because of what potential damage it could cause to my vocal cords, which is very small, but it has happened.
And it is still a risk factor to consider.
It's still a risk factor, absolutely, especially for me and the job that I do. So I'm at a point now where I'm on a very low dosage of carbimazole. I'm comfortable. I find it very hard to know whether or not I'm tired because I have young children or I'm tired because I have Graves' disease. My eyes, I know there's always a lot of talk about the eyes, and whenever I go to my specialist, I have my eyes checked and they seem happy and confident with those.
Do you take any supplements along with your,
because of you and the brilliant thyroid trust, I did start taking selenium, which I have recently been told, and again this is not obviously me giving any medical advice, but not to take it for longer than 6 months. I don't know if there's something you've been told before.
It is recognized there's a lot more research that's required in this area. There was, I believe, a study done involving some people with mild active thyroid eye disease that showed an improvement in quality of life for those participants who took 200 micrograms of selenium each day for 6 months compared to those who didn't take it at all. There is information on the research that has been carried out studying the roles of selenium and iron in the thyroid function by Professor Margaret Raymond from the University of Surrey, some of which can be found on the Thyroid Trust website, as she was actually our online guest speaker for April. And just touching on thyroid eye disease, it is worth mentioning that it does affect around a quarter of people diagnosed with Graves' disease. You are at a higher risk of developing symptoms if you're a smoker. And radioactive iodine treatment that we've mentioned previously, which is a definitive treatment option for treating Graves' disease, can typically make TED or thyroid eye disease symptoms worse. We will be holding a talk on thyroid eye disease online with Professor Simon Pearce in August for those listeners who might be interested in finding out more on that subject.
The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Kiss me quick. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. I'm Louise from the Thyroid Trust, talking to reporter and presenter Ricky Belletto about his thyroid journey. And so how has it affected your life? You know, you mentioned you've got a young family, you know, you've got a busy life. I mean, what's been the impact on your children? Maybe you're a little bit more irritable with them at times, or do they have any understanding?
Yes, definitely. I would say it is a struggle because it depends, you know, if you're very lucky to have kids and young babies that sleep, and some people do, some people don't. I certainly did not. Then
I hear you on that front. Mine weren't great at that either.
You're already exhausted because you're dealing with this health issue. And interestingly, even if your levels kind of get back to normal because you're on carbimazole, there is sometimes a bit of a lag, isn't there, health-wise? So you could be all right, your levels could be fine, but you might still be feeling rotten. Take sometimes 3 months to catch up. We found it very difficult and at the beginning because we were on our own in Manchester. My wife and I didn't have a family support network that was on tap. They were living in London, so coming up and forth was quite difficult for them. So I think I really struggled again trying to make sure everyone was looked after and cared for while also looking after my own health, because it's not really something that's visible, is it, having Graves disease? So even your
people don't treat you like that. People, yeah, it's that thing of, well, you look well, so they assume that you are well.
Yes, exactly, that's it. And especially even before you've been diagnosed, you've lost all that weight, you think, oh, you look brilliant. It's like, well,
that's
actually,
it, yeah.
I feel stinkingly rubbish. But yes, I mean, my wife has been very supportive, but there are times when you think, well, you look all right, get on with it. You know, you need to, I'm trying to feed a baby 3 times in the night and, you know, learning this new thing that's crying and giving
me. It's a very challenging time in life anyway, because no matter how much people prepare you or tell you what it's going to be like, until you actually do it, you don't, it's very difficult to try and put into words the sudden change in lifestyle, isn't it?
And I think also, I mean, I was always quite a confident person growing up, and it wasn't until I was diagnosed and I had these bouts of anxiety, and even before being diagnosed, I was having, waking up in the middle of the night, not knowing where I was, panic attacks. I've never had a panic attack in my life, but obviously my thyroid, just because it wasn't working, and these levels of the hormones, was just going crazy. So I've never felt back to normal again. I've always really just felt still a bit more anxious. So I don't know if that's just a hang up of my body.
I think that's, change. I mean, that's, I was going to say, that's a very, very common symptom amongst thyroid patients, particularly those that have had Graves' disease. I know from myself, that's one of the symptoms that I still, even though I have received definitive treatment in the form of radioactive iodine, anxiety is still one of the sort of hangovers of it for me as well, in terms of, I think my response, I'm much more risk averse than I used to be pre my diagnosis. And everything you say in regards to, still having periods of anxiety. And I think especially if you have periods where you're not getting enough sleep and things like that, that can still cause what I think people refer to as a thyroid flare. So you may find that that can be a contributing factor to what you're experiencing. So if you're in a period of time where you're not getting a lot of sleep, even if you're on your medication, that you're getting bouts of anxiety again.
It definitely has set me back in my career, because you really need to be able to network, and you need to be able to at least look calm and composed when you're live on TV, which I think I do most of the time. You know, we spend an awful lot of time doing live TV, and you get used to it, and you get used to the levels of anxiety. But I it does definitely change me as a person, and put some limitations on what I can or can't do, or what I'm comfortable doing, which is a little bit annoying, to be honest. You know, you just want to be a superhuman, how you felt at your best all those years ago. But I suppose age is related too.
Yeah, I mean, we had a support group on Sunday evening, and we were talking, showing people or giving people skills about journaling, for example, and how you can use literacy to support your mental health in a chronic illness diagnosis. And we were getting the patients to use a single word to describe their thyroid condition, and words like roller coaster and relentless came up quite a lot, along with people sort of saying the same sort of things that you are, that they have to kind of mask a little bit because people don't necessarily understand that, you know, even though they're being treated for their condition or they've had definitive treatment, that they're not 100% okay, back to where they were. And I contributed to that support group by saying that it's definitely taught me about patience and patience with yourself. Because if you set your bar quite high in terms of your expectations of what you should be doing, and especially if you're working, you've got children or other responsibilities in life, you want to be doing those things to the best of your ability, but sometimes you just can't do it all. And it's quite difficult if you've been like that to then accept that this condition is going to limit that. It is a very common but quite hard thing to come to terms with, I think.
It certainly is a roller coaster. It's exhausting, it's annoying, but it's also, you know, you've got to just live and get on with it as best you can. I'm not one of these people that asks for help an awful lot. You know, even with my job, I'll try and write it, edit it, find the location, sometimes even film it. I'm a bit of a control freak and I do as much as I can. So in my personal life, and I haven't been very good at asking for help, and even at work at the BBC, there are things that I have to be quite cautious about. If a journalist or a producer wants me to do five things that week, which are all over the United Kingdom, that's going to really make me have a terrible week the following week. I'm going to be absolutely on the floor and shattered. But I very rarely say no, because I think, well, that's just what they require of me. That's my job. And even when I initially did tell them that this is what I'm going through at the moment, there was never a, do you need a bit of extra support? It was just kind of like, okay, thanks for letting us know. But I suppose because it is a bit alien to lots of people, they don't really know how to approach someone who maybe has hyperthyroidism or hypothyroidism or any of these disorders, because it's not something that a lot of people are aware of. And I think some people think, oh, you might only have it for a week and then you'll be all right.
I mean, that's the thing. I don't think many people are aware that I think currently it affects 1 in 20 people in the UK. I mean, some
that's
thyroid,
a big number, isn't it? 1 in 20. That's 1 in 20.
I think is the current statistics. So, I mean, not all of them are permanent conditions. Some people will have temporary thyroid problems, but for a lot of people, like you say, it's a lifelong diagnosis. I do believe that Mr. Jeremy Vine at BBC Radio 2 has suffered with hyperthyroidism. So, If you ever cross paths in the studio, you might be worth, it might be worth asking him about. I think he has quite openly discussed it previously.
He has. So. And do you know what? I've been listening to his show before and they've been talking about it along with his resident doctor too. And it's great when radio stations, TV programs talk about it, because of course there is so much emphasis on certain disorders or certain diseases, and rightly so. Some are more life-threatening, some perhaps are more prevalent, but when I hear it come up, it really is, it's like I want to suck every bit of information from it. I want to know more, and I'm delighted that it's being talked about and aired, because it's so important that we do put a bit of a spotlight on it, partly because so many people, like you say, are impacted by it. But it's a way of being able to support one another too, isn't it? And sharing these stories.
And that's why, I mean, part of the reason why you and I are talking is to try and put the spotlight on, because we're celebrating World Thyroid Day on the 25th of May. And it's World Thyroid Day and International Thyroid Awareness Week. And one of the things that the International Thyroid Federation asked us to focus on this year as a topic was about genetic and family links. And I know you've mentioned that there weren't any in your family specifically. I will also say that there aren't any in mine either, as far as I'm aware. But so we kind of ran with that and looked at how we could use that as a kind of focus point. So we've gone ahead and used the hashtag this year of thyroid family. And we appreciate that family's not always an easy subject for everyone, and that in modern life, families can be quite complex. But we kind of went off the basis that family doesn't always have to mean blood. It can be who was there for you when you needed support. And we at the Thyroid Trust are a little thyroid family. We all look after each other because most of our trustees are people that have been personally affected by thyroid disease. Most of our thyroid volunteers are the same. They may not be thyroid patients, but they may have had family members or somebody affected by that. And so you mentioned that your wife has been very supportive. Just wondered if there's anyone else who would kind of fall into your thyroid family that's been there for you, that, you know, you can talk to, whether it's, I mean, you mentioned that you found good support through charities, which like ourselves, which is fantastic, but whether or not, you know, there was anyone else in your life that you wanted to sort of discuss that was able to support you through it.
I mean, my parents have been good, and they are always very interested in what my latest blood test results are and talking about it. And, you know, if I get a good result, I'll message my mum and I'll say, look, you know, things, this is what's going on at the moment and I'm really happy about it. Or if I'm really tired and I'm just not feeling myself, you know, my wife, my mum might say, do you know what, maybe you should go and get checked out. Maybe you should get a blood test just to see, you know, what's going on, if there's anything untoward, or just having that knowledge, which is power, isn't it? Yeah. So I would say, you know, I'm very lucky. I've got a very lovely close family, and I also do still message Dr. Rada, who helped me with my initial diagnosis, ever so often, to find out what she's up to, and she'll ask me how I'm doing. And, you know,
it's just that feeling that you're not alone, isn't it? I think that's really important.
Because when we initially had that chat, it was very cathartic, because you don't, like, it's one of those things, you get on with life. And I think when you're busy and you've got kids and you're trying to just survive, and the world is bonkers, you are just putting it on the back burner and you're getting on with things. So it's always really important, I think, if you can, not just to ask how are you, one word answer and move on, really explore it and open it up and get it out there. And we had about, I think it's the longest phone call I've had in a long time. and that's saying something, isn't it? It was probably only about 20 minutes, half an hour, but we, you know, it's really liberating to be able to discuss it and focus on something that's about your health, than thinking about, what do I have to cook for dinner tonight? Yeah. What's my next story I need to film for the BBC, and all the rest of it. So that was really good. And I think having sessions like this, if there's ever a way forward of having more thyroid mentors or adding to that family and people being able to tap into that resource, I think that is invaluable.
The station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello everyone, this is Newsround. I'm Ricky. We're live on CBBC, coming up in the next few minutes.
Welcome back. I'm Louise from the Thyroid Trust, talking to reporter and presenter Ricky Belletto about his thyroid journey. Yeah, absolutely. I know that everyone that we speak to, it is that thing. And we always try and reassure people, because a lot of the time, especially when they're first diagnosed, it is overwhelming. It is suddenly this, you know, like you say, you suddenly go into like research. Most people kind of go into research trying to find out as much as possible. But it's that thing, if you suddenly feel like, oh, well, I didn't know anything about a thyroid. I know you mentioned you didn't know anything about it when I was diagnosed. I actually remember my first question being, I'm like, I'm sorry, what is my thyroid? Thinking I'd heard of it, but I had no idea where it was. Mm. You know, and I don't have any kind of medical background. I actually work in the construction sector. So, you know, it was so far removed from anything in my normal life that it was a bit like, oh, where is it? And what does it do? And what do we do next? And it was all those sorts of things. So I think it's just, you know, realizing that you're not alone. There is a lot of help and support out there. And we try really hard to offer people a range of different ways they can access that. Like I say, whether it be face to face, getting in a group, having a cup of tea and a natter. Now we can do that post COVID, which is great. Because it's we talked about the fact that it not only impacts your work life and your family life, but we've touched a bit on as well the fact that it can really impact your mental well-being as well as your physical well-being.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's really important that we can have those chats. So it's been great. So moving forward then, obviously you mentioned that at the moment the definitive treatment options aren't there for you, and you're quite stable on medications. So
yeah. So I've been told, actually, the last consultation I had was things are looking good and steady, and again they kind of want me to come off carbimazole based on the results of another blood test to see the, and forgive me if my brain fog has hit me.
It's okay. Are you looking at your TSH levels?
Yes.
Yeah. Are they also looking at your T4
antibodies?
And your antibodies, yeah, your T-Lab antibodies, yeah.
To see what that result leads to, whether or not, because I think this is relatively new since lockdown. They've introduced this new thing for patients who are on carbimazole, where they need to test your antibodies to see whether or not you can come off it if your levels are stable.
Your endocrinologist or thyroid consultant will be checking your antibodies before you come off antithyroid medication to measure your likelihood of relapse. And just to briefly touch on thyroid antibodies, they develop when your immune system mistakenly attacks your thyroid, and these cause autoimmune thyroid disorders such as Graves' disease. Antibody tests are usually used to confirm autoimmune diagnosis, as around 95% of Graves' patients will have an elevated TRAb or thyroid-stimulating hormone antibody when they're diagnosed. And these levels can also reflect the severity of your disease and be used to determine how likely you are to achieve a long-term remission after taking thyroid medication like carbimazole.
I've relapsed twice in the past. Yeah. But my specialist did say on that very same day that I met her, a male had come in and has not relapsed. And you know, it's more than a year after coming off the medication. It's possible. Does happen to some people. And I wonder as well, you know, life isn't as stressful now. Kids are starting to get a bit older, feel a bit more content, and hopefully being aware of giving some self-love every now and again, and making sure I take a step back when I need to. I'm now much better at work saying I can't do that, or, you know, I need a little bit more time to do this. So yeah, who knows? I mean, I'm hopeful, because I'm always a glass half full kind of guy, but at the same time I've learned to live with it. I think in the future I would have more permanent treatment if this does carry on, because you can't, you know, live like this forever. And carbimazole, I don't think it's advisable to be on it for longer periods of time. Although it is more common now, I think, that some people are on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know through chatting to lots of thyroid patients that there are thyroid patients that have been on carbimazole for longer periods of time, and that's worked for them, staying on a low dose. And then you say some people do go into remission successfully on medication. And then it's always that unknown factor, though, isn't it? I suppose if you said, mentioned before, you like that feeling of control.
That's it. And if
it
you
takes
are
that
anxious.
Away from you. And if you're anxious and if you're worried that it's going to be coming back, and every time you feel a bit.
So you come off of it and then that's it. You're like, right, okay, what now? So
do you have any sort of tips that you use personally to help in terms of, you know, manage those anxieties, manage your stress? Whether, you know, do you do anything like meditation, journaling? Do you use a calm app? Or
yeah, so I do use some apps, not often enough, but just breathing, literally just breathing. And I know how important it is. And I'll find myself, if I'm feeling a bit more anxious, or the heart's racing, or just things are getting on top of me, or I can't remember my lines for something, I will literally just breathe in, hold that breath for 3 or 4 seconds, breathe out, do that on repeat until I start to feel a bit more grounded. So just breathing, that's literally it. I started to try to do a bit more running, getting out of the house, 20
okay,
minutes.
Okay, so you found that you are able, I mean, you mentioned you went to the gym before diagnosis, and now you've been able to return, because I know that's a big one for a lot of people when they first get diagnosed, obviously under, I mean, I was medically advised not to do anything because of my heart rate was so high like yours until they'd got my levels a bit more controlled.
Right.
But I really missed it, because for me it was headspace. You know, I used to like going swimming and being active and being outdoors and being able to do those things to find that mental clarity. So it's a great relief for me to be able to return to that now. And have you been able to
recapture definitely that? Definitely. It's just finding the time, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there is that as well, yeah.
And all the other commitments you've got. So, and I suppose the weather's starting to become a bit better now. So we say that it's been a shocker of a year so far.
I was going to say, it's a nice day today. It's sunny with me today, but the rest of the week looks a bit rainy.
I was going to say, to everyone listening to this at the moment, if you're hearing birds tweeting around in the background, it's because I've got the windows open. And it is a beautiful sunny day while we're recording this. But I am, I'm trying to find a bit more time to do all of those things. And I don't put commitments. I don't say I've got to do it 3 times a week, because I just know if I do that, it ain't gonna happen. So I have to make sure I just do it as and when I can.
Well, yeah, and you're back to pressure on yourself again, which, you know, adds to the stress levels, which isn't good, as we know, for your thyroid condition. And how did you cope during, because obviously you were diagnosed pre-COVID and pre-pandemic, how did you cope in the pandemic? Did you find that made a difference? Did you find access to healthcare okay?
I've got a twofold issue here, because not only was I still on medication, dealing with a newborn, my daughter was born during lockdown, she's going to be three tomorrow. I also had to move from Manchester to London. We made a conscious decision to try and be closer to family. That meant I had to get a new consultation, appointments with GPs. It got lost in the system. I was given choices of hospitals. Then one picked it up, the other one didn't pick up. It was just a bit of a nightmare. So I had maybe about 7 or 8 months where I didn't really get to see anyone, but I was just desperately calling up my GP, trying to get carbimazole, being told, oh, we can't give you it because you haven't got a specialist who signed off the latest, this, that, and the other. Begging for it, eventually being given it, but maybe just like half a month's worth of tablets. So it was a really frantic time, actually. And you've got lockdown on top of that, and just the world was going even more berserk than it is now. It was a bit rubbish, but I got through it. Seemed to be okay. And I know that a lot of people, the hardest thing was just the contact, wasn't it? Being able to speak to a GP face to face, because sometimes a GP can make a better assessment looking at you. Seeing your trembling, seeing your struggles, as opposed to just having a chat with someone on the phone, not wanting to be a nuisance, and then not really giving them all the information that they require to make the diagnosis. And we were all a bit more anxious and a bit more on edge. So I imagine there would have been plenty of patients who may have had these awful symptoms and just put it down to lockdown and being inside. And so I'm sure there would have been plenty of people who would have really struggled. And I don't know if the Thyroid Trust had more people coming forward at that time or trying to work out what it was that they had or seek more information. But I'm so glad that we're back to normal now.
Yeah, I think we all are.
And just, I know I know that I was able to cope and deal with it because I had been through it and I was diagnosed much earlier, but it would have been a lot harder for someone who hadn't experienced hyperthyroidism or any kind of thyroid disease to have got that diagnosis during lockdown.
Well, that was me.
Oh my gosh.
I was diagnosed in the middle of the first lockdown.
Right, I remember now. So
June 2020 was my first official diagnosis, but I'd been to A&E was the only option when you rang 111. And no one wanted to go to, I did not want to go to A&E before this, you know, this is the very start of COVID, and you know, all that you could hear on the news was quite terrifying, to be honest. And I didn't want to go to A&E because I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to go with these symptoms and come back with COVID. And I did take myself up there one morning when I woke up with a ridiculously fast resting heart rate and I felt awful. And they did actually say to me that you are probably just anxious because of lockdown. I mean, they did all the tests to make sure there was nothing wrong with my heart, which there wasn't, but nobody actually checked my thyroid or recommended that I go and have my thyroid checked or any of those things. So I just believed that at that time it was a mental health issue for me. And that's how I treated it. I actually ended up doing some online counselling and things like that. And then, as we discussed at the very beginning of our conversation, the symptoms of the tremors started. And that's when I just thought, I don't think this is in my head. I think this is something very physical that is going wrong here. And I had a blood test done, and yes, within, like you say, very quickly, someone was on the phone saying, you really need to see a doctor and get yourself sorted because you have got hyperthyroidism. I'm always really grateful that at the time I had private medical health insurance through work. So I was still able to get some consultant help quite quickly, but it was all done online. I didn't actually, when I actually met my consultant face to face for the first time, I think it was only in 2022, I think it was, or 2021. It was quite emotional for me because I'd built this relationship with this consultant over Zoom, basically. And he had done his absolute best for me in terms of offering advice and trying to support me because I had quite a few other complications. And when I actually finally met him, I was actually finding it quite emotional because it's like, oh, I felt like a little bit like, it sounds quite dramatic, but oh, he saved my life because I was so poorly. And he got on top of it very, very quickly. And I will always be very grateful for that. So yeah, but I mean, now obviously for people, there's just the long wait times, I think, to see consultants and get procedures done. I mean, my radioactive iodine treatment was delayed because of COVID, even though it was being done privately, it was still delayed. So, you know, we do know that these things are happening on the NHS at the moment. So
yes, yeah, I mean, across the country, across the land, there's delays, and it's something that they're tackling with an awful lot more in Scotland as well. But it's just one of those things, isn't it? And my advice to people who I meet who are struggling, or people who've contacted me, and I've not really said very much on social media about my diagnosis.
So you might get a few more now.
I've always just said to them, look, just make sure you do go and see your GP and you demand to have a blood test, because that will give you a definitive answer as to what is going on with your body. And I think a lot of young people are better at doing that now, you know, and that is partly down to all these different smart apps and what have you that can help.
Well, raising awareness is so important.
Find out what's going on with your body, being a bit more in tune with what you're eating. And so I think that's really, really fantastic. I think, you know, we always criticize young people for just not really caring, but I would say a lot of young people are more in tune with what their bodies are doing and maybe are a bit more conscious about trying to stay active and fit because they've grown up with that message rammed down their throat. And unfortunately it's forced on us quite a lot on social media to look perfect, be perfect, and we all feel like we need to do whatever we can to join that. good or bad. But I think, you know, a lot of young people are probably a bit more aware of these things now, and we just need to create more awareness. And hopefully that's what we're doing right now.
I always say that I have a little mantra, which is for thyroid patients in general, which I don't know if you can relate to this, but it's things may be tough, but you are tougher. And I've got it stuck on my notice board in my office at home. And whenever I'm having a bad day, I look at that and I think that is so true. Things that can be tough, but you are tougher and you will get through it. So do you have anything like that that you use to kind of like, you know, get you through the rough days?
I have nothing like that. Just try and get through it.
Just try and get through it. Wake up thing. I'm here. Let's do this.
Yeah. I think the most important thing in my life is the support that my wife gives me and what I offer her. And I think we try as hard as we can to support each other in all aspects of just work, kids.
A teammate.
Yeah, having a teammate and just being able to offload where you can. She builds me back up again and I try and build her back up again. We're there to support each other. I mean, I love that mantra. I think what you're saying is spot on, because things do get really tough, and in all walks of life, but especially in high pressure jobs too, with the added pressures of, is my body working properly? Will I be able to get through the next couple of days with this workload? What will happen if I come off medication? All these things swirling around in your head. I just try my best to get through it. And I think having a good attitude is the most important thing.
It's been lovely to talk to you, and I really appreciate you sharing your story. I know a lot of people will be listening and find it really interesting. So I think if we maybe just end on what would be your one piece of advice to anyone who thinks they may have thyroid disease or is recently diagnosed, what would you say to them?
I think know that things will get better. Be aware that you may be in a place which doesn't feel like your own body. Your thoughts may not be the same. You may be really struggling just with your identity, because it does change everything about you, but it doesn't last forever. In that sense, you get used to some bits, other bits will go away, some bits may stay, but just really don't panic and ask questions and take a blooming notepad along with you to your consultation. And your
That's a great tip,
because they do throw a lot at you. And I know time is scarce and there isn't a lot of time to go through all your symptoms and there's a lot of advice that they may give you, but just jot one or two things down in a notepad that you can keep taking back.
Thank you, Ricky. Thank you very much. And as I mentioned earlier, thank you very much for making me cool. my 9-year-old daughter, this has really given me some kudos, the fact that I'm talking to you today. So as a parent, you don't get many of those days, and I'm very grateful for that. So thank you.
That is amazing. Oh, Louise, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And I'm really, really grateful we've had to have this conversation. Hopefully whoever's listening will learn something from it and may be able to relate as well.
Yeah, and we'll be posting lots of information about anyone who is listening and does feel they need some extra support and advice on where they can find that from us at the Thyroid Trust.